Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Running on fumes, come on down to the Doom Room. I'm Alex, and I'm doomed.
Don't you dare assume, because you're in the Doom Room. Boom, boom. I'm Justin, and I'm doomed.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about Doom Patrol Season 1, Episode 11, Francis Patrol. So, brief bit of recap here, in case it has been a while since you watched the episode.
Having so much fun with the naming.
Yes, again, very appropriate to what happens in the episode.
Yeah. Worth the wait.
It's actually not that much fun. It's just happens.
One of the most amazing moments of television I've seen in a long time.
Well, just wait until you find out about Francis. About literally any other television show, they also have episode titles. Did you know that?
No, but come on. I mean, the whole time you're like, who's Francis? And then the reveal, and then, oh, come on.
So we got a couple of things going on here now that everybody is awake, no longer in the underground. Larry is sort of off on his own thing, figuring out what the negative spirit is trying to tell him. Ultimately, he connects in person with John, his love from back in the day, and gets some closure there in a really beautiful way. Meanwhile, Jane takes Cliff and Rita to get some closure of Cliff's own, specifically with his daughter, Clara. After Bump dies, he kills an alligator, gets a watch, leaves it for her, and
My eyes out.
Yeah. Falling my freaking eyes out.
Last thing we get is some stuff going on with Cyborg. He, as we sort of suspected, things are going wrong with Grid. Some things are going wrong with his technology. And ultimately, by the end of the episode, he has been captured by the Bureau of Normalcy, taken to the Ant Farm. Bad things for him. Yes. You were going to say something, Justin.
Yeah. I was going to say, this show swings for the fences. This episode alone could have been a season.
Was it your favorite of the whole?
It's hard. I don't pick favorites of anything because I'm dead inside. But what I am saying is that this episode is great. And the emotional payoffs in this episode were huge for two major characters.
Yeah.
And yet we still have.
You're talking about Bump and the alligator, right?
Yeah, exactly. The end of the Francis story was sad for Francis. the Gator fans out there. This Gator goes down, and we off panel.
So maybe not dead, because if you die off panel,
Do you think Francis character didn't really live on panel though either?
Come on. Do you think Francis just coughed up the watch? Is that what happened, Pete?
Well, it could be a Romance of the Stone situation where
you're going to have to explain that.
Well, the main character explains it died right in its arms. So
Michael Douglas,
and then she says that no place I'd rather be. I mean, come on.
Wasn't a great explanation of the Romancing the Stone, where the main character played by Michael Douglas kills a gator and shows up in gator skin boots.
Yeah,
at the end. And says that line.
Great. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the fact that both of you guys are making references just for each other, and I'm just right over my head this episode.
They're for all of us, Alex. Mm-hmm. It's just you're horribly underinformed. Just as a person.
Now, just to check this, the Romancing the Stone thing, was that another segment on America's Funniest Home People?
Now that's a good reference right there. Thanks. You might as well have said, hey, you idiots, is this just another America's Funniest People reference? No. Romancing the Stone is a great action romantic comedy from the, I want to say, late 80s. About this, Alex? Is Francis Patrol the same Francis as Francis Ha?
Yes, probably. I do know what Romancing the Stone is. And there wasn't the sequel, Romancing the Nile? And it was bad, right?
Correct. It's been largely removed from the canon.
I do remember watching Romancing the Stone and being like, I don't know what's going on here.
It doesn't hold up, but man, there's a lot of fun moments in Romancing the Stone.
I mean, and there's a lot of fun moments in this episode of Doom Patrol. So we should get into it and talk about this episode of Doom Patrol.
Romancing the Doom.
Now, why don't we start with the Larry storyline? All of these storylines are very well contained into each other, even though everybody is overlapping, at least at the beginning of the episode. But the Larry one, like Pete was mentioning, really got me right here. I think I mentioned a couple of episodes back, the Danny the Street episode is my favorite episode. And I think a large part of that is how emotional Larry's storyline is here. And the closure we get is so surprising. Like, there is no world going into this episode where I thought, A, John is alive, and B, these visions that he's having are actually John. But that's exactly what's going on here.
Just so cool and beautiful. And, like, the whole, like, carrying him. Like, there was so many small, unbelievable payoffs. That it was just, I'd be surprised if you'd watch this and stay dry-eyed.
And it's not just that it's about the tragedy of it. It is very sad at points, but it's also very hopeful, and it's you feel really good for what Larry goes through and arrives at here. But it's also like very romantic, and their relationship is like super hot throughout the whole scene. Like the first scene where they're like they meet up, it's very like this like forbidden love. They don't ever get to like be with each other. Then they're like have sex, drink whiskey, eat steak sandwiches. Like they're living the dream in their moments. And he says, I love you. Like it's just really great across so many different ways.
Yeah, I mean, even like the kind of closure that LT gets to have at the end of this is unbelievable. But the fact that the light being did all this for him was just also so touching. The fact that like he wouldn't have got this at all if he, kind of pay attention to that being that lives inside. It's just it's beautiful on many levels, but it's also great to see LT moving forward. But we got to talk about that first shot for a second there. You saw this amazing old car just kind of coasting down the road, and if it pans up and the road is like driving into the moon, I mean, it look I don't know if that's what heaven is or what, but then just pans over and you see the
driving into the moon.
Hey man, heaven is driving a road. Heaven is driving a car on the road to the moon. Old Bob Dylan LePage.
It was pretty it was pretty beautiful shot. But I just think that the
turn LePage,
all the little details in this was just, really fantastic.
Before we continue to move forward, is there anything else that happened before that initial shot that you want to talk about, Pete, or are you going to go this episode?
Oh, wow. Look at you.
I just want to make sure before I start to get emotionally invested in talking about Larry's storyline that we have to jump back to what you did 3 days ago.
Poke the ancient ghost bear.
I'm not going to go into the the DC flip bit. It's okay. We can move.
Are you sure you don't want to, Pete? You don't want to try to call it a name?
Get out of here.
See? I mean, the reason I bring it up is because I looked up what it was actually called, Pete.
Really?
Yes. And in fact, it is called, are you ready for this? The DC logo. It's called the DC
Classic
logo.
DC.
And here's a little more information about it. It is 3D, 2D animation designed by a lady named Dawn Chanette.
Yeah, Dawn.
She's an art director and motion designer based in Los Angeles. She also created, the DC logos at the end that sort of have a little animation based on the hero. Mm-hmm. She designed the Flash and Aquaman first, and then they based the rest of the Justice League off of that. And she's done a bunch of other projects as well. So there you go.
Thanks,
Alex. I appreciate that you were like, "I'll put out this fire with a bucket of information." But I'm so sorry, but that's not how Pete LePage works.
I'm looking forward to next episode where Pete's going to be like, "All apologies to Dawn Chanette, but this is called the," and then offer up five other names.
Back to Larry, though. I did want to say I love the sort of arc here in this episode with Larry and the Light Being, and just overall the season so far, like Larry's begging the to be let back into the dream, and the Light Being's like, yo, chill, I'm working on something, I have a project I'm working on, it's great, you don't even know you're actually connecting with the real John, and then we're gonna do that. I've bought a bunch of post-it notes when you were sleeping, and I've been hanging up in your room, and it's reinforcing my theory that I think the Light Being is a part of Larry, sort of the good part of Larry that he has so broken away from with the hate he has for himself and his life. And he needs to get himself back together physically.
Well, I'll throw something else out at you, which ties into that interview that Niles did with the Negative Spirit back in the day, where he
it's the Light Being,
sure, where he said torture is, I think, part of this, and in a totally non-selfish way, is the Light Being trying to alleviate that torture because perhaps it feels everything that Larry is feeling. So to bring him to this place of emotional closure with John, almost more importantly for the life of the show than John, to bring Larry and the Light Being together and working together and communicating with each other, that's something that's going to lessen that torture that he's feeling so that, I don't know, maybe he can go free. Maybe he can go somewhere. Maybe Larry can let go of that part of him. Or to your point, Justin, if it is actually part of him, incorporated him more fully into himself.
And I want to kind of get back into what Justin was talking about, the big swings. Like, we went from this beautiful kind of like LT moment of like, let me back in, please let me back in, to like Cliff kind of staring off, you know, from his race car set, you know, having kind of maybe a moment, and then all of a sudden a giant alligator accident kills Bump, you know, and it's kind of like, wait, what is going on? So like the it goes from absurd to hilarious in seconds, but still feels like the same show. It's really impressive.
Yeah, I agree. And then like the fact, like you're saying, this episode is making us cry. I would restate what Beard Hunter said last episode. Fuck, this is us.
Hey, come on, man.
We don't need that show. We can cry at this show.
Does Milo Ventimiglia, and I've never watched This Is Us, so maybe it does he also have an additional dinosaur head?
No.
Then not as good.
He does have a really good beard, though.
No. Does he save the cheerleader at any point in This Is Us or the world?
He does save people from burning building. I think that counts. But I think that
doesn't he die in there? Doesn't a crock pot kill him or something? I've read a couple of headlines.
Oh, you know what? This isn't going to be.
You get it, then, Alex.
This, yeah. You know this.
It's like watching a TV show.
This isn't fun. Anyway, so Rita doubles down on the whole Karen moment, which is hilarious. Straight out, just
hold on. You're going through the storylines way too fast.
Well, I'm excited. And
here's the thing: I'm starting to think you ragging on the DC logo is your anchor there, and without that, you're just spiraling out of control and want to talk about everything at the same time.
Alex took away your Tiny Tim crutch, and now you don't understand.
Just like in A Christmas Carol, Scrooge takes away his crutch, and then Tiny Tim starts airplaning all over London going, what's the only thing holding him back?
Wait. That's your Pete impression you just did, right?
What was that?
It was Pete. It was Tiny Tim. There's a lot of stuff going on there.
Oh, also a turkey.
Another scene that we could talk about, though, in the Larry storyline that I thought was great was when...
Oh, we're just sticking Larry? We're just doing finishing
Larry? There's more to say.
Yeah. We can go back. Yeah, we're only going to talk about Larry, and then we're going to wrap up the podcast.
Okay, good.
You're good at that, right? You don't have time to cover this alligator thing. I hope you didn't want to talk about
that. Oh, man. That's all I want to talk about.
Yeah, maybe we can work in a little bit about Rita eating chicken wings, but that's probably all the time.
Oh, come on, dude. That was a fun moment. I mean,
so just choose between Gator and chicken wings, Peter. You have to choose. We can't do both. We don't have time for both.
None, another Sophie's choice.
Again, just like in the movie, just split them both in half. That's how you solve that problem. Mm. And then switch the halves.
Gator wings.
Mm. You're onto something there. Anyway, Larry has this great scene where the Negative Spirit takes him to this bar in public instead, and John is getting on him about, even in a place where they could be free, Larry is still scared. He's still hiding in himself. And this is a pretty obvious one, and we've talked about this even before, but it really ties into this idea of Larry has this thing hiding inside of him, but really he is hiding inside of himself even more than the negative spirit is. And that really comes out nicely in the scene. I just loved how this played out, and I loved what Matt Bomer does throughout this episode in terms of his openness in the motel, how he shuts down in the bar, and ultimately, just through the voice acting at least, as well as whoever is, I'm blanking on the name of the guy who does the body of Larry Traynor in those scenes towards the end with John, it's just very gentle, nuanced work throughout the episode.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really
And I do think...
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think in this episode, two of our main characters open up and really confront all of the issues that have been holding them back, one more successful than the other. But the fact that we get both of these storylines happening at the same time is really shocking and impressive. And also the line, you haven't fucked anyone since JFK.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, and they're laughing.
JFK got fucked harder than anybody.
Oh, my God, what the fuck? Dude,
he's, wow, no, he's voted
too soon,
by
Pete.
No, BuzzFeed, I mean, why?
BuzzFeed
the fact
voted
that
him.
That was your first thought. Is really messed up, man.
BuzzFeed voted him the most fucked president. Now, does this imply that Larry had sex with JFK?
Mm. No, no, it does not.
Something maybe to think about.
I don't know.
Now, I do. Oh, go ahead.
Well, last thing. Do you think John at the end fell asleep or died?
I think in my notes, I wrote down, and then John dies, and then he put the blanket over his lap, and I was like, delete, 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 falls asleep. So I'm not sure.
Because it was sort of like a scene like, well, he died so I can leave. But also it was like, you're not going to say anything to the lady? Because the lady's going to be like, hey, this dude in bandages killed the guy here.
I'm sure he did. You know what I mean? We had to find out. Yeah. No, I'm sure he talked to the lady on the way out.
No, he just gets up and walks out. He's like, thanks. He's like, thank you, light being. Goodbye, corpse. Or sleepy.
I'm sure that just we didn't see that part. I'm sure it happened. Anyways, I want to get back to
wait. Do you think he died or just fell asleep, Pete?
Died.
I think he fell asleep.
Really?
Yeah.
I think died.
It's a weird thing to do if he dies and then you gently place a blanket on somebody to keep them warm, because that doesn't matter to a corpse.
Wow.
He would have put the blanket over his face or something like that. Right?
To keep his face warm because he's sleeping.
Exactly.
Yeah, I guess the two telltale signs is if you blanket the hands, sleeping. If you close their eyes, dead.
Blanket on the hands, full asleep. Blanket on the head, not making a peep because they're dead.
Blanket on the hands, the man of sands is there.
What?
Blanket on the head.
What is happening?
It's Skype time instead.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I think it's blanket on the head. You're fucking dead.
There you go. Pete, you love this, right?
Yeah, this is my worst nightmare.
Poetry? Poetry, Pete?
Oh my God.
You know, your buddies on your This Is Us podcast aren't as fun as us. They never recite poetry.
Yeah, by the way, how is Crockpot doing?
Oh my God.
You and your boy Crockpot.
I want to talk about
and Sir cries
LT,
a lot.
LT and John, the fact that, like, you know, this was such a huge LT kind of episode, but also the fact he got to see John's like pictures of his life, other things he got to do. Like, it was a nice, like, the fact that he pushed him away initially felt really wrong, but like the fact that he did kind of like let him have a great life, and you know, they got to see each other at the end. It's beautiful. The fact that like he made it either before he died or before he went on a nap, you know, is great, you know?
Well, and I will say, I think another show might have taken the story like John being like, I waited for you, and like going that way. And the fact that he's like, you didn't get over me? And we see pictures of him and, like, I assume that was Jimmy Buffett he was dating.
Oh, come on.
Some sort of parrot head in that picture.
Oh, my God.
They're Pete, like both Hawaiian shirts and bucket hats. They're clearly parrot heads.
That's the only person who would wear that is Jimmy Buffett. I agree.
yeah.
Pete,
yeah.
You, from the very first episode here, were very against Larry and very against his relationship and doing things on the DL and everything. It sounds like you've really turned a corner in terms of this plot line. Is that
well,
correct?
Because LT's finally growing and like doing stuff and getting outside and making a difference and like, yeah, go see John, dude. Like, come on. Like, try to heal some of these open wounds that you have.
So do you think then, is it okay to cheat on your wife as long as you get emotional growth out of it? Is that what you're suggesting, Pete?
Oh, my God. That's awful. No, next, obviously, he's got to go after his family. He's doing baby steps.
His wife died of cancer a couple of... years
I
back.
Did think in 89. I did think it was
or maybe
weird
she's taking a nap. We're not 100% sure.
Check the blanket. Check the blanket.
Is it over the hands or is it over the head?
Is there a doctor in the house? Someone needs to check this blanket. I can't tell if they're living or dead. Is my wife, is she napping or is she dead? Please. I thought it was interesting when he's like, yeah, I have two sons and I don't know. I'm not going to check in with that. Especially when the other part of this episode was someone desperately trying to reconnect with their kid. And Larry's like, I'm not going to talk to those kids. They're kids. Boys.
Kids are gross.
Ugh. Yeah.
Well, I also did, before we move on to one of the other characters, appreciated the fact that we got an explanation about how he lived so long and stayed relatively young. Just, I mean, it's an offhand explanation of, yeah, it's the radiation. That's what did it to me. Mm-hmm. But I like that. We've been slowly working down the list of why everybody is so old and it's okay. And that's good to me.
It's good.
It's good.
It's good for radiation.
Yeah. Radiation. Why don't we move to the other big storyline and talk about Cliff reconnecting with his daughter, Clara, because there's a lot of fun moments there, not least of which is, of course, Francis, the alligator. But Pete, what'd you think about the storyline?
Okay, so... Let's just talk about it first. I mean, the fact that, you know, Francis turns out to be the alligator, ends up killing Bump. Bump's trying to get this watch. And then
Did you notice that the title of the episode was actually Francis Patrol, which set that up? That was really interesting.
So it's setting up a lot of things. But then when you finally see the gator and the gator full on does like this unbelievable jump out of the water at Cliff. I mean, that was really badass. Like, I just started laughing out of pure enjoyment of like, that's such a huge setup. And then also a fun delivery of what could happen. I mean, this show was having fun. I'm having fun. This is just as if such a fun thing to do for a cutaway, you know, and then later we see Cliff with the watch, like, just great. Just
it's amazing that gator, that Francis the gator, was able to do that when it was full of bump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could see it had a big bump in it.
What did you guys think of literally the name of the bar was Salty Bumps, right? What'd you think about
Jai
that?
Was not a fan of Salty
Pretty
Bumps.
Pretty gross. I would not go into a place called Salty Bumps.
Well, the Salty Bump Bumps is not for you.
Do we know why his name is Bump?
No. Is it short for something? Did he like to do bumps of cocaine so people gave it to him as like a fun nickname?
Yeah, or a bumper
maybe
cars.
He had a bump on his head or something and people just called him Bump, you know?
I used to have a bump on my head. You guys never called me Bump.
Oh, no, that's true.
Missed opportunity.
We did call you Salty Bumps, though.
That's true, but that was for my horrible rash.
Mm-hmm. That was a fun time. This whole storyline was good. I'm glad we finally got to it. I don't feel like it went on too long, so I don't want to imply that. But Cliff has spent so much time avoiding seeing his daughter, even though that was his main thing from the very beginning, to finally get it here in this way where he doesn't tell her, but he gets to see her and he gets to do something for her.
I mean, yeah. The fact of like he kind of like, you know, he's stalling. He doesn't know what to do. He's just kind of watching. And then you're like, oh, God, what is he going to do? Just blurt out all this stuff on this, you know, poor person while they're trying to work their shift, you know. So it was like the fact that he stormed over just as there was going to be a thing and he got to like hold her hand and help her up was and the flashback. It was just
that
such
moment.
A beautiful. Oh.
That moment when adult Clara grabbed his finger and it flashed to baby Clara grabbing his Cliff's human hand, I thought that was such an emotional punch that I did not see coming and really got me. Just that was so sweet. It's really well done.
Are you thinking about like when you're later in life going to be this robot and then you hold your child's hand and you flash back to like when you guys were both human?
I was thinking about the time that I helped you onto a stage that we were doing a show.
Pete, a lot of people don't know this if they're just listening to the podcast, but we'll always just grab you by one finger very gently.
Yeah.
And just kind of hold it.
That's how I get on stage.
It's very sweet.
Yeah. He's a big baby.
Yeah.
He's our big baby.
Yeah. He's our big old salty bumps.
So salty bumps. Jumping back to the beginning, I wanted to say Cliff realizes this. It's his time. He has to go do this now. He's been procrastinating and just bailing on it, to your point, Alex, for so long, and he's finally pushed into it. So much so that he's been so concerned with Jane for so many episodes, and then she's like, Flit, I need you. And Jane's like, he gives him more of like, hey, that's not what we're doing right now. But Flit reacts to Cliff, because I think Flit and the other personalities inside Jane know that Cliff did go to the wall for her recently. So Flit appears, rises to the surface, and takes Cliff and Rita down to Florida. So I thought that was a cool moment.
Yeah, went to the well.
This is just a structural / emotional question, but why don't you think, from a writing perspective, why don't you think they sent Jane down with Cliff? And the reason I ask that is because Rita and Cliff haven't really hung out much, so I get the idea of we keep mixing around the different pairings so we can find out more about everybody. But Jane, as the surrogate daughter to Cliff, or at least what Cliff wants her to be or seems to want her to be, to throw her into a situation where she gets to see him with his real daughter, I feel like that makes a lot of logical sense. But why didn't they do that? Why didn't they go for that right now?
Well, I think Rita is a good kind of like person when it comes to like, you know, drama and that kind of like stuff that Cliff needs to be dealing with. I thought Rita was an interesting choice of like kind of knows maybe what somebody should do in a social setting of like, you know, but I think it's also fun that Rita kind of gets stuck with Cliff, especially later when she's just screaming at him when she thinks he kind of like fried his circuits or something. I don't know. I do like that they're mixing it up, but it didn't really kind of occur to me of like, why this parent?
Yeah, I don't think it's to the detriment of the episode. It just sort of feels like a no-brainer to bring Jane into that situation. So it implies to me, and again, even though I've seen it, I don't specifically remember, it implies to me that there is something coming down the pike in terms of not resolving that relationship, but moving it forward into a different way now that Cliff has actually seen his daughter. And I think at the end of the episode, sort of decided to leave her alone, let her move on with her life. Was that your impression of where things were left, or no, not at all?
I think it's a polite way of kind of like trying to introduce himself into her life. You know what I mean? Of like being cautious and kind of like, but you know, here, got this for you.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Rita is there. She's been like the best friend role, like literally in the Karen episode. And then I think she is sort of helping everyone, dragging them along the way to their sort of better selves, which I think is an interesting role. And she seems to be, in this episode, she's coming to her own self a little bit more by going by her name, Gertrude Cramp, which is not a stage name.
Come on.
Well, but I'll tell you what, Gertrude Gertie? Cramp. Come on, definitely eat a plate of chicken wings. Rita Farr cannot.
Yeah, that's 100%
right. Gertie can put down the chicken.
But to answer your question, Alex, I think Jane would have tipped the balance away from, and it's too much exposure for Cliff, I think, just from, like, he needed to be there so he could not be pushed into talking. And Jane would have been like, deal with this. We got to go do other stuff. Yeah. So I think it was just a way of letting Cliff sort of walk up to his story a little bit easier.
I think that makes sense, particularly because Rita's role is usually, I could care less about any of this stuff. And certainly she's trying to care more now and she's trying to get more involved. But like you said, it's more in a supportive way. Another detail we should mention in terms of the Jane-Rita thing is at the beginning of the episode, we do get Jane being more proactive about everything. calling a meeting, trying to find the chief, and forcing everybody to actually look at this comic that Danny provided a couple of episodes back, which is appreciated, and even pointing out to them that Flex Mentallo is missing. And they're like, how did you figure that out? And she's like, I looked at it. It was Mentallo's.
Yeah, Flex Mentallo.
Get with the program, you idiots. So I like this new Jane.
We were right there. It's only the rest of the Doom Patrol. They don't even like to be called the Doom Patrol. That are too far behind.
Yeah, turns out. Yeah.
But I do like, I like this new Jane that cares, who has come out of this underground situation. It's interesting to watch these characters over the course of 11 episodes slowly try to become more proactive about things and then rail against it and then push backwards and swish who is the one who's like, why aren't we doing anything? And then the next episode, that person will be like, well, I'm really bummed out about what happened in the last episode, so let's not do anything, which feels very true in a way, honestly.
Yeah. I tried last time, so I'm done trying now. Mm-hmm. Well, and I also think I think Jane was the episode where they went to the school. I think she spent all of her life being like, no one can help me, I'm lost, who cares? And then I think she got the taste, she mentions it in this episode, that the Niles was going to put her in that place and there was a reason why. And so she wants to find out why. Like, maybe there is a plan for her to get out. And with her experience in the underground with Cliff, there's a little more hope there. So she's much more proactive because of that, I think.
Why don't we keep talking about this storyline? It's mostly Cyborg. There's not a ton of Jane in this episode, though the connection there is that there's this big central conversation they have about loss of control. But the big thing here is that Cyborg finds out what we speculated a little bit about last episode, that Grid seems to be taking over in some way, ultimately leading to Cyborg shutting down his operating system in this episode. What do you think about what's going on with him?
It was horrifying when he cut open his arm.
Oh, yeah.
That was his very intense.
Well, and that's the thing. It's just like crazy to... I loved his monologue where he kind of like, as he's talking, he realizes, oh, wait, me and Jane kind of do have similar problems where we're not kind of completely in control. Like other people can be at the controls. So it was like a really interesting moment where like Vic's kind of saying this out loud and he's like, are you fucking serious? That's my whole life that I've been dealing with that. So like it was kind of a cool bonding moment, you know?
Yeah, I like that quite a bit as well. A couple of other things, just as I'm looking through my notes here, I really liked Cliff yelling, watch, in the swamp. Very funny.
I mean, Cliff swore
so
much
yelling
that he,
for Francis, like, here, Francis. Like, very funny.
Cliff swore so much that he fully shut down for a while in this episode.
Did you get worried about a robot wandering around in a river? I thought he was going to rust shut immediately.
Yeah, it's a real oil can situation.
It was
a
swamp,
he's cobalt, he's cobalt steel, as we learned today in this episode. So that's maybe pretty good against rust.
Yeah, having the kind of car guys looking over Cliff and being kind of talking to him like he was a car was really funny.
Now, do you guys want me to explain what the theatrical warm-ups that Rita was doing in this episode? Because as a classically trained actor, I'm happy to walk you through.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, go ahead.
So it's just Look
who wasn't prepared to actually do it. It's like you have never read An Actor Prepares by Uta Hagen.
Ooh, wow, Alex digging deep into the old brain. He does. We do a little red leather, yellow leather, a little opening up.
Yeah, she opening loved up being the called the Hoggers. That's what. First day of acting class, she would always be like, "Go be the Hoggers."
Yeah.
I am the Hoggers. It's time for the acting.
This is Big D over here.
Oh, man. I was worried about Big D.
Big D's great.
No need to worry. He's great. Like, he doesn't want to dirty a glass, so drink right from the pitcher. No questions asked.
Like it's a mug.
I'll tell you what. Yeah. I kind of ship Big D and Rita a little bit. I think they're going to be a cute couple going forward.
Yeah, definitely. Big Dita.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
Any other moments from the episode you guys would like to call out in particular?
I like the way that the Bureau of Normalcy is scary. Like, they do a good job of taking them because they're sort of lame in other episodes of the series or in different ways sort of throughout. And in this, the fact that I love the trick of like, hey, look at my elbow. And that's
That was
cool.
Weird.
And then getting into the capture, I thought was really intense and scary.
Yeah. I did like the kind of Jane freaking out at Rita being like, I'm not living in a 90s rom-com like Karen. You know, even though I kind of felt personally insulted by that line, I thought it was enjoyable. I also really loved Jane's, instead of calling Vic a dickwad, she calls him a, hey, Vicwad. Very enjoyable. Very funny.
Great improv technique.
Good stuff overall. Before we wrap up here.
Oh, wait, I have two more things to say.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I think I love the speech that Clara gives. Live life like ice cream on a hot day. That was cool. A lot of good moments in there. And of course, we have to mention.
The speech was really beautiful.
We have to mention Animal Vegetable Mineral Man, who won't testify against his raptor head.
Same.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that either.
Let it ride.
Wait, Pete, were you going to say something about Animal Vegetable Mineral Man?
Yeah, I just like the shout out.
Oh, okay. Great. Good to hear it. Yeah. Before we wrap up then, let's talk about who was most doomed in the episode. Pete, first over to you. Who was most doomed?
Well, I feel like Big D is the most doomed. We'll never see him again. And, you know, it's kind of sad. You know, maybe him and Rita could have hit it off. At first, I was really worried. But then it just seemed like it was a guy who maybe drinks too much and is not that bad of a person.
I'll tell you what. I got a hard disagree with you there. I think Big D is living his best life, drinking all that beer, eating all that chicken, talking to pretty ladies, doing whatever he wants to do.
Seems to have a connection with Shireen in a good way.
Exactly. So there you go. I think it's all good with him. I'm going to say, there's a lot of people that are pretty.
Francis?
I'm going to give it up to John. There's, as we talked about, might be dead, might be napping, not 100% sure. Either way, he doesn't have a lot of good days left at this point, so
that's
things
good.
Not looking
well. We're
going to
do, we do most doomed, then we do most sleepy as well. So
also
we'll
John, in my estimation.
That makes a lot of sense. For most doomed for me, I'm going to go with Cliff. I feel like he had the chance to actually connect with his daughter, and he couldn't do it. And when you take a swing like he did, I think it's going to be really hard for him to take another one. So it feels like he's really up against it with his emotional arc.
Interesting. I feel like we didn't really talk about this, but I kind of disagree with you a little bit there, Justin, just because I think his takeaway was hearing that speech, he realized Bump actually, versus the nightmare he had a couple of episodes back, was the father that Clara needed, was the father he never was for her. So I think that's why he left. So yes, maybe he is the most doomed. Maybe he won't be able to take that swing again. But I think ultimately he heard what he needed to hear to move on with his life at this point. I don't know.
Maybe. But I mean, he left without talking to her. I think because he was walking in there to give her the watch, and then he saw her and realized that he couldn't. So he may have – that may have been closure for him, but it also feels like it was a bit of a bail, and maybe there's more to be done here.
Maybe. If you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Please come out. We'd love to chat with you about Doom Patrol. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast, and many more. And now, a piece of advice from Pete LePage.
Don't kill napping people. Just shake them.
How's it going at the nursing home, by the way?
I got fired.
So sorry to hear that.
People don't like being shaken awake, turns out.
Shake and wake, I always say.
Shake and wake, man.